This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Soldiers serving overseas have a new perspective when they leave a world of combat and return home. They've seen and experienced situations that civilians in the relatively peaceful United States have not. Some veterans may have lost limbs or suffer from traumatic brain injuries, while others readjust rather easily. I recently talked with a panel of veterans about social, mental, and physical issues that some veterans experience. Cindy Graham is retired from the Army and works at the Toma VA Center as an outreach coordinator for Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom, and Operation New Dawn. Robert Thone is a Marine veteran and is a Global War on Terrorism outreach technician at the La Crosse Vet Center. Jeff Johnson is a retired Marine Master Sergeant and Secretary of the Navy's Retiree Council. Johnson is also a transition patient advocate with the Toma and Madison VAs. And Brian Steffi. He's an Iraqi veteran who served in the Army and is now president of the Veteran Advisory Committee. Steffi says it's important to remember that no two veterans experience the same thing overseas.
So no two veterans are going to come back and have the exact same issues. And then even when you have two veterans that have PTSD or have TBI.
And what's those, TBI?
Traumatic brain injuries. Which you're gonna see traumatic brain injuries from motor vehicle accidents, from rollovers, from ordnance explosions, blast injuries, and a lot of that stuff we're gonna get into later. But I think it's important to understand that even, you know, just like two cancer patients can't be treated exactly the same, you can't treat two veterans exactly the same. But it's also important to understand that it seems like a big stigma's come out that every soldier coming back is going to have, you know, it's almost an overreaction to PTSD. So every soldier that comes back, or every Marine that comes back, is going to have some of these symptoms, and it's not the case. So I think that stigma really needs to be challenged, and needs to be challenged openly and honestly. And I think that some of the best people you can hear that from are veterans, especially those with PTSD. I mean, I know I was diagnosed with it, and I don't feel that it hinders me on a day-to-day basis, so I don't think I should be stigmatized for it.
So I want to first talk about maybe some of the social issues that veterans face. They come home, they have to readjust to civilian life, you know, get reacquainted with family, with friends, make new friends. What is that like for, I know you said there's no average veteran, but what is that like for someone coming home?
Joins. Jeff Johnson. Yeah. When a person joins, they're leaving a lot of stuff behind. They're leaving their best friend. They're leaving their mother, their father, their sisters, their brothers, the people they hate the most. They're leaving all that behind, and they're going on this odyssey. During that odyssey, every one of those people is replaced with somebody. And I think one of the challenges they face when they come back, you ask everyone who's served, you know, what's it like while you're serving? You know, you complain a lot. You know, it's hard. And but when you are done with it, when you come back, you miss it. It's a really weird feeling. It's hard to replace those people that have replaced your family with people back here, because the people back here in your perception, they don't get it. They don't understand. So it's hard to talk to them about certain things. I think that's one of the challenges.
It is difficult to come back and reintegrate into society. I mean, you have to understand, you're not brainwashed when you join the military, but you are trained, and you're trained very well. And that's one of the reasons that the U.S. military is so successful, is that, you know, it trains its personnel extremely well to be observant, to be all these different things that you have to be to survive effectively and operate successfully in a combat environment. And to come back to a peacetime environment and then find yourself with a toolbox full of plumbing tools when you're trying to build a roof is very complicated, and it can be very frustrating and very confusing for a lot of veterans, and that's why it's very important to I'd say for family members, you know, you really can't push a veteran to reintegrate. It's going to happen naturally, and sometimes it's a painful process. A lot of times there's bumps in the road, but you can't. It's nothing you can speed up. It's nothing you can slow down. You know, a 6-minute egg still takes 6 minutes to cook, no matter how bad you want that egg. So I think that's the best analogy I ever heard put on it.
Cindy Graham?
Well, I was going to say that there are a lot of resources out there for veterans when they return home, and one of them, of course, I represent, and that's the Operation Enduring Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom, Operation New Dawn program at the Toma VA Medical Center. And It's a place for veterans to come to be screened, not only for mental health, but for medical conditions as well, because we're concerned about both of them. And part of what we do in case management is to help these veterans, when they return, to recognize the skills that they did bring home and to assist and walk alongside of them as they try to translate some of those skills into the skills that they need to function well in their life when they come back.
And Robert Thone, another place for veterans when they come back is the Vet Center in La Crosse. Can you talk about that?
We try to provide a peer-to-peer model counseling, kind of a place where these ladies and gentlemen can come to talk with people who understand what they're talking about, to not be misinterpreted, to be understood fully. You find often the words are said that to understand the unspoken words that they're trying to get across. Veterans oftentimes will complain that a counselor or a career advisor of some sort doesn't understand, and they just can't verbalize the emotion, the feeling, the thought process. And so we try to provide that outlet and try to provide that that peer support of that in every shape. Keep a real relaxed environment. You know, we encourage people to come down, you know, have a cup of coffee, you know, just stop by to talk and to enjoy just being home and getting stuff off their chest if they need it.
And along with the social issues, some veterans come back and they may have some mental health issues. Can you talk about the different issues that certain veterans may face?
Besides mental health or along with mental health?
Along with mental health and the different mental health issues. Jeff Johnson.
I think, you know, the mental health issues are just one of the it's just part of the puzzle. Mental health issues weren't really okay to have in the military until about 2007, 2008.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's a big stigma attached. There were studies done by the New England Journal of Medicine that alluded to that, that as leaders, we don't want our troops to perceive that we're weak. And a sign of weakness would be saying that you're having a problem. So it's been drilled into you from day one that you play through the pain and you're focused on your mission. And what you're experiencing right now, if it isn't killing you today, and if you perceive that it isn't really going to be a problem 4 months down the road, then you work right through it. And that's the nature of the beast. But what the study started to see cracks and fissures in every branch of the military, but they focused on the Marine Corps and the Army, on soldiers and the Marines, because they were the tip of the spear in these battles early going in the war, where they were transitioning from very rapidly from fighting an enemy with a uniform to fighting an enemy that had no uniform, that was fighting this atypical war. So the those who got out in the early going sometimes have a hard time admitting they're having a problem. And if you talk to that person who got out in the early going and you say, would you believe that someone is deploying right now to combat again with a prescription for Prozac, they think you're lying. But it's the reality. It's the reality now that within a small unit, within a platoon or a fire team, that you have people talking openly about what they're seeing. I think where this came from is the senior leadership. I can speak from the Marine Corps, but I imagine the Army's quite a bit the same. As you advance in rank in these military organizations, you're pulled out of your job, out of your occupational field, your MOS, for a period of time to see if you can perform on as a recruiter, as a drill instructor, guarding an embassy. When that cycle was complete, when all those folks started coming back and experienced war on the level that the young lance corporals and sergeants were experiencing it, and everyone started having nightmares, I think that's when it changed. That's when the light bulb came on. So it's a challenge. You almost have to ask someone when they served first to really gauge
sure
you know, how guarded they're going to be.
Brian Steffi?
And that's true. With such a prolonged engagement, you know, a lot of the things that Jeff was alluding to are absolutely accurate. You know, a lot of the soldiers and sailors and Marines that served actively in the opening salvos, if you will, a lot of them to this day can't accept even peer-to-peer counseling. They, in fact, a lot of them from certain studies that I've read, nothing as distinguished as the New England Journal, unfortunately, but a lot of those studies even show that sometimes they have a harder time accepting peer-to-peer support strictly because mm-hmm. of the fact that they've been so long ingrained in the idea that it's not okay to admit weakness. And I mean, that's very difficult. I mean, you're talking about PTSD. Well, PTSD manifests differently in everybody. The DSM-4 is actually what mental health professionals use to diagnose these, and they actually look for what they call clusters of symptoms. So it's not just one or two things, and that's why it makes it such a tricky disease or disability to diagnose. Is you can't just look. I mean, the list is 30 some odd symptoms that can manifest. You know, four or five of those could constitute a diagnosis, but four of those five could constitute something completely different. It's such a difficult and complex thing to nail down. If I've got PTSD and I'm trying to talk to somebody else about it who also has it, we may have two completely different clusters of symptoms. And that's what makes it such a difficult and challenging thing to deal with. I think that, again, though, I think the most important thing to remember is, you know, you can't assume anything about a vet service based on when they were in or what they saw. Or everybody handles things differently. Some people's psyches just can't deal with what you're actually going to see in war. It's not a pretty thing. I mean, these guys are doing some amazing things in some very, very terrible and tough conditions. And just like Jeff said, a lot of times it's close your eyes for a few seconds, take a deep breath, and move on and complete the mission. And I mean, that's something that you're going to hear in the military probably from your first day until your last day, and then you're always going to think about. I mean, you're seeing soldiers and Marines experiencing closer blast injuries than ever before, and that's because that's how the enemy wants it. They've disguised these things, and they've used atypical warfare in a non-symmetrical way to really place our fighting men and women as close as they can, and you know, honestly, it's one of those things where the military develops better armor because the enemy built a better bomb. And so it lowers our KIA numbers, but it raises our TBI numbers because now you're seeing more concussions. I'd much rather have a soldier come home with a TBI as opposed to coming home in a flag-draped coffin. So, I mean, that's a wonderful thing, but it's again, we have to get out in front of these things as we're recognizing them and be proactive in what we're doing to diagnose and treat these things and be open and honest with the soldier. I see a lot of times that's another big issue is the military tends to keep information from them. You look at Agent Orange, you look at depleted uranium poisoning, Gulf War Syndrome. You know, all these are three big instances where the military either knew and didn't disclose fully or simply didn't know the full effects of what they were doing. And at least now the military is open and saying, look, this is what it is. You know, look, you know, if you're engaged in this certain action, you're going to go to medical the next day and you're going to force that soldier to seek that treatment, which is a huge step forward. It used to be it was primarily driven for the soldier to go and seek his own care. So, I mean, you're seeing these huge transitions. And I think it's just important that when the soldier comes home, we continue that new look and we get them the help that they need.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. Today, we're talking about issues veterans may face when returning home. My guest today is Cindy Graham, Outreach Coordinator at Toma VA Medical Center for Operation Enduring Freedom, Iraqi Freedom, and New Dawn. She's also retired from the Army. I'm also joined by Robert Thone. He's the Global War on Terrorism Outreach Technician at the La Crosse Vet Center. He's also a Marine veteran. And Jeff Johnson. He's a transition patient advocate at the Toma VA and Madison VA and Rockford, Illinois Vet Center. He's on the Secretary of the Navy's Retiree Council and a retired Marine Master Sergeant. And Brian Steffi. He's president of the Veteran Advisory Committee. He's an Iraqi veteran who served in the Army. Is there any way that the military prepares soldiers while they're deployed? And can you talk about some of the different strategies?
They have redeployment classes or briefings, if you will. Again, speaking for the Army, you've got probably 50 briefings you're going to sit through. You're going to sit through the chaplain talking to you about different outsources or different resources for you to go through. When you leave the service, there's the TAPS program. When you're coming back from overseas, you've got a lot of health screenings. And a lot of that stuff is very valuable when you take it into the VA, primarily because they're going to be able to look at that, and they're already going to know kind of a baseline of where you're coming from, coupled with your military record. But I think the Marine Corps has another type of program. Yeah.
Jeff Johnson?
When I was out in Quantico working with wounded Marines, we were also able to see a lot of the development aspect of what was going on. And to address that point, I think what all of the branches saw is that the more realistic you make the training, the more the less likely your soldiers, your Marines are going to be to succumb to combat stress, which can ultimately lead to post-traumatic stress. So the training was made to be more realistic. If you looked at a facility called the Combat Town, circa 1982, it looked like a stage set off of a Universal Studios tour. You know, it was plywood and there wasn't much to it. And you look at a combat town today in the 21st century, and it has sewers. It's a real city. And there are real players, the characters running through there. So you can make that training as realistic as possible. And I think Cindy can tell you from a psychological standpoint, you know, if you prepare the brain to see a certain thing, then the brain can process that information. If the brain isn't prepared to see what it just saw, it processes it completely different.
One of the things I wanted to add to this, too, is so much of what we're talking about here is normal reactions to abnormal situations. And as we talk about the mental disorders and the medical disorders, please keep in mind that many soldiers come back, and after a period of readjustment, they're fine. They're just fine. And some take longer than others, but usually what we see is they come back, and if there are symptoms, they usually don't start really emerging until 6 months to a year after they come back. I get calls from wives or grandparents or parents that say, you know, I'll use Jeff as an example because he's sitting here. You know, Jeff was he came back different than the way he left. On the other hand, I hear a lot of people call me and say, you know, my son or my daughter, my husband or my wife, they were acting kind of strange for a while, but they're back and everything is fine. And again, I just want to emphasize that it's a normal reaction to an abnormal situation.
And Brian? That's a great point, Cindy. I mean, you know, I think that that's another great stigma that needs to be broken as well, is that, you know, just because you deploy or just because you've seen combat doesn't mean that you're going to be off kilter for the rest of your life. It is perfectly, you know, and it's perfectly logical to believe that you can come back and lead a normal, successful, healthy, and very fulfilling life and not be a burden to society. And I think that that's a great way to state it. There's always going to be a huge period of readjustment, or not a huge period, but a period of huge readjustment, I should say. But once that takes place, and I mean, I don't know the statistic, but I have to assume it's an overwhelming majority. You're going to lead a perfectly natural, normal life.
I also want to talk about some of the physical changes that some returning veterans may face. There's a huge array of things that happened while overseas. Can you talk about some things? If someone stepped on an IED and they've lost a leg, or as Cindy, you were mentioning on the phone, even there's skin issues that some veterans face. So, I mean, there's just a huge...
Well, we screen for respiratory problems, for dermatological problems, for gastrointestinal problems. Certainly people return that we case manage that are amputees, those with mild, moderate, or severe brain injuries, spinal cord injuries. There are a number of injuries, and I think Jeff, as the transition patient advocate, is probably the best one here to talk about some of those issues because he's the one that's really coming alongside and walking with them and helping them with their compensation and pension.
Sure. Two of the main categories of injuries I see outside of the mental, you know, the injuries of the mind and the soul are injuries from exposures to toxic waste, toxic chemicals, sand, particulate matter, burn pits. If you look at your average troop's life, who was an infantry person, who was out on patrols, not just infantry, but driving people, you know, driving supplies around, when they came back to their safe place, that safe place normally had a burn pit in it. And because they were lower ranking, they were living downwind. So that was considered home. Now, if the four of us decided to get crazy tonight and take 500 gallons of diesel fuel out to the local landfill and burn it, you'd evacuate that area. Because certain things aren't supposed to be burned together and we'd be called biological terrorists. But that was the Lance Corporal's job to do that. That speaks a lot to the potential danger of what they've been exposed to. We're starting to see it now. You see it with the skin rashes. Common areas for skin rashes are on the chest or on the legs or on the feet. But if you work with enough of these vets, you start to see commonalities. So that's one thing. The other thing is the development of the armor. And I'll use that the 80s analogy. When I first came in, I had we called them steel pots. Our helmet had a plastic liner and a steel outer shell. That helmet that has evolved into a ballistic helmet, which has evolved immensely. My first flak jacket was solid olive green. It said Nixon's hired gun on the back, literally. It weighed about 16 pounds. The flak jackets now weigh about 80. There's been advancements in the personal body armor to protect everyone who's out there on the line and the armor of the vehicles. So what was once danger close is far enough away. Okay, there's a big change there. And so our troops are getting closer and closer and closer to that point of impact, but at what cost? And that's where we start to see the physical changes in the the GI tract, any gas-filled organ, when you're that close to an overpressure created by 5 150 5 millimeter rounds all wired together. You're talking about 500 pounds of steel in composition B exploding at once. It does a number on those gas-filled organs and on your whole body structure as well.
Jeff Johnson is a transition patient advocate at Toma and Madison VAs. Robert Thone is an outreach technician at the La Crosse Vet Center. Cindy Graham is an outreach coordinator at the Toma VA. And Brian Steffi is the president of the Veteran Advisory Committee. All are military veterans. Coming up in the next half hour, the conversation continues as we talk more about mental and physical issues that some veterans experience when returning home. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, and other reports from the La Crosse News Bureau, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse.